from education to employment and everything in between. It's a clearinghouse for all things shale. It's the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier and Rusty Fender.
Good morning and welcome to the Shale Gas News. I'm Bill DeRozier. Joining me in studio, DC Taylor.
Right.
Thank you for opening the door, unlocking it, allowing me to get in here.
Of course.
It's been many weeks since I saw your beautiful face. And actually, your face has changed. I haven't even noticed the goatee change.
Yeah, I shave off the thing every now and then. I think this is going to be permanent, though. I don't want to look like I'm well into my 60s when I'm only, you know, just slightly close to 50. So, yeah.
And of course, we got Rusty Fender on the line. Everything's aligned perfectly. It's almost like the winter solstice is upon us.
You bet. Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm a little tired from crazy running around, hopped up on kombucha. That's my source of caffeine these days. Never thought I'd be that kind of guy, but I'm living life. What about you, Rusty?
All is well. I just want to offer a word of advice that facial hair, DC, makes you much, much older. Just remember that.
Yeah. I saw the picture with you. It was you and me and Dan Muser and Sue Henry. And I said, who's the like 60 something, you know, besides you, 60 something year old guy in the picture. I was like, oh, wait, that's me. All right. I'm shaving that thing off.
Yeah. But, you know, I'm 60 something, but it's kind of like I don't look like I'm 60 something.
No, you don't.
Make sure I'm shaving every day. That's the secret.
That's it.
Well, we were chatting before we went live here on the show, and you reminded me here, Rusty, that we have legions of fans, and it's always exciting when we come across them. And I want to give a shout out to a couple of the folks over the last week and a half that I ran into, both at the Lackawanna College shoot, Sporting Clay shoot. I met some of the people participating in the tournament. Some of them thanked us for the work that we do every Saturday and Sunday, depending on which broadcast you listen to. And of course, this week I had the opportunity to sit down with some of the law enforcement officers of Susquehanna County. We had representatives of the state police, the county sheriff's office, and some other folks in the room. And I want to give a shout out to the Susquehanna County Sheriff's Office. Some of those folks there said that they listen to us routinely every week. So
nice.
We really appreciate that when we come across, like, as Rusty always says, our legions of fans.
All right.
And I just find it amazing that you met all three of our listeners in 1 week. That's amazing.
But that's why we do it. We do this for the people because they crave the conversation about the energy industry. This is the Shale Gas News, a show dedicated to helping you understand why energy matters in our lives, why our lives are made better by that energy that we have. And of course, we like to extol the tremendous impacts of that energy industry. And just out of curiosity, where do we find you this week, Rusty? Where have your exploits taken you?
I'm on a big project this week for the rebuilding of Interstate 80. It's a 30-year project. I hope to see about two more years on this, but it just started last year. They're rebuilding Interstate 80 between the Monroe County line at the Delaware Water Gap and the 81 Junction, slab by slab, mile marker by mile marker, foot by foot. And it's amazing because some of those original concrete sections, of course, I'm working for the DEP, which is in conjunction with PennDOT District 5 out of Allentown. But some of those slabs, Bill, in D.C. For Interstate 80 actually predate the interstate system by a few years, and they go back to 1959.
Wow.
So the original concrete you're riding on between the crossings, factory outlets, and the 81 junction up the big 7 mile hill in Pocono Township are actually of over 60 years old. So they're trying to do lane by lane, working at night, working on weekends, working on holidays. It's not easy anymore to close down lanes, as both you gentlemen know, on an interstate. There's much traffic at 3 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday as there is at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So it's a daunting challenge, and a challenge that, you know, keeps everybody working.
Well, I was going to say, I've lived down in Northeast PA better part of 15 years now, and I'm not certain I've ever seen 81 with all of its lanes open, or the Cross Valley Parkway Crossway either.
Yeah, and you know, these projects go, you know, these projects go 5 to 7 years in advance. And, you know, the infrastructure, as we all know, it's amazing that now we say this is, as a civil engineer, but it's amazing that we've gotten so long out of these structures without very, very little maintenance. And I always joke about this as an engineer for the better part of 45 years. But it's amazing that we don't do much preventive maintenance in this country on anything, Bill, and you can relate to this. The water pipes, the gas pipes are from the 1890s. There's no replacement until there's an explosion or a failure. There's no preventive maintenance on most of the infrastructure. The infrastructure. Bridges anymore, you can't even repair bridges. You have to replace them because they've gone for the last 70 or 80 years without any maintenance whatsoever in a very, very, very harsh climate. It is amazing that if you put a few cents, and I'm telling, you know, I'm not a backseat driver, but if you tell these townships and boroughs and municipal planners that you put a few cents into these structures every year, it saves a total fail and a total replacement at the end of 70 years, Bill.
Well, I'm glad you brought up preventative maintenance. From our standpoint, the upstream side of the business and the midstream side, we invest millions of dollars and thousands of man hours a year on what we call preventable maintenance, right? So that idea, like you just said, where the traditional thought used to be, okay, go until it breaks and then fix it. Our industry in the upstream and the midstream sector, and one of the reasons why we host this show is to highlight these things, implements a variety of different preventative maintenance techniques to ensure that not only the operation is safe from the people working there and the landowners nearby and the environment, but it's also efficient and it keeps running. You know, some of the things that we do up in the field is, I like to call it the sacrificial lamb, but we use sand probes that go into a piece of pipe. And as the oil or the natural gas, the water and the sand go by it, eventually that probe fails and it's designed to fail. And when it fails, it sets off an alarm. And we actually send out people that do ultrasonic testing of the metal to ensure that the metal from the inside out is at the right thickness. And if it isn't, we replace it then and there so we don't have a catastrophic failure. We're also getting more and more into machine learning. Like, we have enough data points now every single day, every minute of every single day, that they can look back on months and years on engine run times and valve run times and different things, and they can predict out when something might fail so we can prevent that from happening. We can go really close to it, be efficient and effective, but we don't ever put ourselves in those kinds of situations. It's crazy that the amount that the energy industry, especially in the upstream and the midstream sector, have done. But you do make a point. We talk about it all the time. We as a society get so used to being able to drive down the road or flip a light switch on, and we don't appreciate the fact that much of that infrastructure is based on populations of the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, based on techniques and understandings of engineer and technology from the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s, some instances longer. And unfortunately, instead of making the investments or making them more often, we often are in a position where we have to wait till it's too late and we have a failure, or it becomes so inconvenient to fix and update. As you mentioned, you know, trying to do work on major interstate highways right now, we just have way too many people living on the East Coast based on the infrastructure that we have, slash the needs of repairing, replacing, and updating.
Yeah, and you're right, Bill. And let me backtrack a bit. And the gas industry, of which you're involved in, you know, with Cabot Oil and Gas, now Coterra Energy, and the gas industries, which I worked in, you know, briefly, you know, about 8 years ago. You're right. And I think the reason is a lot of the technology that goes into making things safe in your business. And we talk about this for the last 9.5 years of the show, is the extreme public scrutiny and federal scrutiny on the natural gas and fracking industry. I always say that 50% of the people know nothing about fracking and the other 50% have it all wrong. And I think that's a big deal, you know, when we talk about, you know, GPSing every single welded joint on every stick of pipe that goes in the ground. That is unbelievable technology. In the old days, you had a blowout, an inadvertent return somewhere in a farmer's field. You had to go through there. You had to dig the whole field up to find it. Now you're globally positioned with satellites to find the exact millimeter where that break occurred, because every weld, every shielded metal arc weld on that pipeline has its own GPS address. And, you know, PennDOT, which I worked very closely for the last, well, 10 years or so, they're doing much the same with road rebuilds. It's a whole big invitation into a new world of science with the new coatings, Bill. When you rebuild a road now, it's all positive and negative ionic catatonic and ionic surfactants that are used in the tack coats, the coats of tar, liquefied emulsion that makes the road sticky enough to adhere new pavement. You just don't pave over a road. There's a lot of positive and negative science that goes into it. Again, surfactants that will hold that pavement a lot longer than just applying a new coat of asphalt. So I think that we're following science now for a good thing after the last 60 years of just doing, you know, haphazard work some of those years. I can't speak for the entire industry, but there's so much science that goes into building a road, putting in a pipeline, and, you know, preventive maintenance on your side of the deal. Now, it's absolutely astronomical, Bill.
It certainly is, but it's also fascinating at the same time. And the energy industry and the associated industries, what I consider advanced manufacturing, are constantly evolving and adding even more technology, sometimes directly into what we're discussing on this program. And sometimes they're just ancillary things to solve an issue or a problem or a waste stream and turn those into beneficially reused projects. I enjoy working for this industry. As you mentioned before, 50 people don't understand it. 50% that do understand it don't actually understand it or don't get it. And it's so true. And that's why I have a passion for my job. And that's why I have a passion to join you and others on this program to share good information about the energy industry. I'd be remiss if we didn't mention the hurricane that touched down over Florida, middle part of Florida, just south of Tampa, and worked its way over there. Rusty, I'm curious your thoughts. You're somebody that I usually turn to on a lot of these things. What are your thoughts? It's our first, I think, major hurricane in a few years to hit Pennsylvania or Florida. I think it's been a while since one hit that side of Florida. It's just interesting. I'm really curious to see how quickly the cleanup happens, / infrastructure gets turned back on, power, roadways restored, things like that. But what's your take on that?
Yeah, and you're right, Bill. And, you know, it's 101 years since it hit that coast, 1921. It's a long time. Globally, you know, we all have to have, Bill, someone to blame. So climate change, global warming will be the bad guy in this deal. We've had horrible storms before. How could you blame the legendary storm of 1921 on climate change? That term didn't even exist. So when it comes to climate change, I do believe that it's real. I do believe the ocean temperature is almost 2 degrees warmer than it was in 1950. I do believe the reports that I read. I do believe the stories. And then I look back at history and I look at the 30 and the 50 and the 100 year cycles and say, you know what? It was hotter than it was at certain times of the century than it was this past summer. And Hoover Dam and Lake Mead behind it, it's never been that low since they built the dam. Yeah, you know, I understand all this. And I do believe in cycles. And I do believe that, you know, in that case of the parched, burning, boiling Midwest, yeah, it's a problem. And it's happened before. And it's also exacerbated by the fact that you've never had more people, more farmland, more industry taking water from the Colorado River than you did in the last 100 years. So there's a cause and effect, I think, of everything. And again, is climate change real? Yeah, I do believe it's real. And I do believe that it's causing problems in certain areas of the planet. But again, there's a cycle, there's a cyclical value involved in that in science as well. I think this may drive up the prices of gasoline for a while, getting back to the Hurricane Ian in the Gulf of Mexico, still moving up the coast. And I think, you know, when you stop working all the drilling platforms, which is what they're all, you know, centered on, you stop transportation via helicopter between those platforms, and you interrupt the flow of petroleum and, you know, and natural gas from the area, yeah, I think it's going to have an impact, but we've been through this before and we'll have to wait and see. These storms are quick moving. The cleanup is slow moving, but we'll have to wait and see, Bill. But a lot of impacts in a lot of different areas. And South Florida and Florida is used to this. They board up their homes. They buy bottled water. They try and leave the state if they can. If they can't, they hunker down. This was pretty severe. It was 5 miles per hour away from a Category 5. So this was just no ordinary thunderstorm that rolled through. So we'll have to wait and see. But, you know, the loss of life now with hurricane prevention is a lot less than it was a mere 25 years ago, Bill.
Well, Rusty, you hit every topic I was going to bring up. I think, and it might be controversial, it might offend people, I think one of the reasons why these storms are so dangerous and omnipresent and everybody gets really concerned about them is the fact that more people live down there now. And on top of that, there's more social media. We're getting hit with more of it. We understand it or we see it more. And I think that has a lot to do with it. But at the same time, I think you hit on another important topic. And this is what the guy that we his name escapes right now, the energy philosopher that we have on the show. But anyways, he talks about this. Yes, while we still have hurricanes and they may or may not be impacted by climate change, the reality is climate-related deaths have gone down. And I'm not minimizing those who are impacted, those who may have lost their life from this storm, or those who are you know, losing everything about their life, house and home and all of that. Not minimizing that. That, I think, is a reflection of a lot more people living there, living near the coast in an area that's always been known to have hurricanes and inclement weather. But what we know is because of fossil fuels in general, the recovery will be much quicker because as that storm moves out of there and the National Guard moves in and FEMA moves in, they're going to be able to drive gasoline and diesel-powered vehicles. They're going to be able to bring in generators and hook them up. Shelters and hospitals will be able to return back to normalcy. In 1920s, they didn't have that luxury, right? When things got knocked out, they were knocked out for a lot longer and people were exposed a lot longer. So again, I, for one, often look at this whole keep it in the ground movement as if that's going to somehow or another stop these hurricanes and snowstorms and everything from happening. It won't. It's not going to. Maybe it impacts the difference between a Category 4 and a Category 5. That remains to be seen, but the events themselves will continue. But because of the energy industry, because we have access to these things, life will be made better. But I think you hit the other nail on the head. As a prevention, a lot of offshore oil and natural gas in the Gulf Coast went offline and hunkered down. That'll return, especially since the way that the hurricane went. So I think that'll be a short-term disruption as well. I think the bigger issue is going to be the impact to an already strained supply chain as it relates to agricultural products. Florida is not only an agricultural producer, but it also produces things that we need, like derivatives of farming, fertilizer, potash, things like that, that come out of Florida. So the impacts of this storm are going to hit that, which are already struggling. And we already know that inflation and things in the grocery store are up, supply chain issues are up. So that's what I'm more concerned about coming out of here. Short-term bump to an already high gasoline price, diesel price, but then ultimately how will it impact our food supplies over the next couple of months as that recovery happens?
And you're right, Bill. And I go back to what you said too about social media. You know, I have my phone set for all new stories, of course, that have to do with science and technology, being an engineer myself all my life. And with the social media now and all the, you know, the instantaneous information flow via the internet, this amazing, incredible link called the internet, the international network. You know, I can see there's a pipeline that makes history. A pipeline breaks in Portland, Oregon, 3,000 miles away, and they have it on my phone in 30 seconds. We weren't privy to that news a mere 25 or 30 years ago, pre at least the public end of the internet. So now all this influx, this avalanche of information is available, which really seems to make a lot of mundane things, just it brings it to the forefront because everybody gets it. Even if you're not interested in it, even if it doesn't impact you or affect you in any way, we have all this information and it's kind of like a football game where you pile on. Everything piles on to this extraneous event 3,000 miles away, but we're so privy to the news right now that we didn't have 25 years ago. I think it makes a bigger mountain out of a molehill in some cases, Bill.
I couldn't agree more with you. Well, Rusty, why don't we jump into Fender's Fast Facts?
Thank you, Bill and DC. And Monday, October 3rd, was the start back in 1974 of the Watergate hearings involving the United States versus President Richard M. Nixon. I remember that very well, D.C. We watched it at Pittston Area High School almost every day in my senior year back in 1974. You look back on it now, it was very interesting, but it was very boring to a senior high school student back then.
Bunch of high school students. I can imagine trying to watch a legal hearing where they,
And you know that hearings aren't really the most riveting type of entertainment on television anyway.
No.
So some facts about Watergate, which we may not have known. Celebrities were made from two journalists who broke the Watergate story back in 1972. So it took 2 years to come to fruition. Carl Bernstein, of course, and Bob Woodward from the Washington Post. Some interesting facts there. it's not illegal. In a 1977 interview with David Frost, Nixon famously defended his actions during Watergate by stating, "When the president does it, it doesn't mean it's legal." Where have you heard that recently?
All right.
To indict or pardon. After Nixon's resignation, officials struggled with whether or not to indict him. Article 1, Section 3, Clause 7 of the Constitution says that a person removed from office by impeachment is liable to indictment. Of course, that didn't really matter because in 6 months later, President Gerald Ford pardoned Richard Nixon. Origin of the scandal, D.C. In 1972, 2 years before, when the Republican Nixon was running for re-election, the United States was already, of course, deep in the Vietnam War, and the country was deeply divided, making the election very hard to predict. Nixon's team felt that a forceful campaign was essential for the president, and it was later discovered that some of the tactics they'd undertaken were illegal espionage, the tapping of the DNC, the Democratic National Convention headquarters. When the wire tapes that the team had installed failed to work, on June 17th, a group of five men returned to the Watergate building in Washington, planning to replace the bad microphones. Of course, the burglars used Scotch tape to hold open the latches on the door locks. Security guard Frank Willis went down in history by noticing the tape and called the police, who caught the men 18 minutes later, red-handed. And DC, we all know the way that, you know, rumors and sayings are really embellished. But did Richard Nixon ever really say, "I am not a crook"?
Did he really say it? This is a trick question. I'm going with yes.
It is a trick question. He did say it. Okay. And he said it during Watergate three times. And then President Ford's declaration that, quote, "our national nightmare is over," was used five times in response to Richard Nixon's three times that he was not a crook. Okay. So whether or not Richard Nixon was a crook and one of the greatest presidents, in my opinion, that ever lived. I corresponded with him for years when he became an elder statesman later. I worked across the street from him at the 26th Federal Plaza in New York City, D.C. So we still have every letter, all 43 of them that he ever wrote to me. And I thought he was a great man. And, you know, compared to what goes on now, you know, Richard Nixon was, crucified for spitting on the sidewalk compared to what goes on now. But a great man nonetheless, but some really shady tactics even for back in 1972 on the almost the anniversary of Watergate. And those are the fun facts this week, DC.
All right, Rusty, I would like to see some screenshots sometimes of some of these letters. That sounds very interesting.
I will do that.
Thank you. And all right, there you go. Your Fender's Fest and fun facts for this shale gas news with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, and I'm DC Taylor. Stay here for more. You've probably heard a lot about natural gas and how it's helping to bolster America's long-term energy security. But did you know that the Marcellus Shale in Pennsylvania is home to an abundance of natural gas? This formation is the second largest natural gas field in the world, and the reason why Coterra Energy is investing billions of dollars in the production of this valuable resource. By doing so, we're helping America become a world leader in energy production. We're also helping to generate a stronger local economy by creating hundreds of thousands of jobs and paying millions in taxes and royalties to landowners, farmers, and dairy producers. Clean-burning American natural gas also helps our country reduce energy costs, improves air quality, and protects the environment. Here's to securing our nation's energy future and creating economic prosperity for today's farmers and the generations that follow. Coterra Energy, responsibly producing clean energy for all.
Yeah, the benefits are very good. The benefits are all day one here. The dental, health, vision, everything is top notch. Everything is very good.
Drivers wanted.
The 401k plan, we have a 6% matching program. The medical, there's a health spending account, and you could use that for co-pays. You could use that for prescription drugs. You could use that for anything just to help along with deductibles. And then you could put in from your paycheck, it's tax exempt. You could put in so much bi-weekly, and then that helps out too, because it is before taxes. So.
If you're looking for steady year-round work with a company that cares about you and your family, at GDS, you will drive locally and be home after every shift. Get all the details and advance your career with GDS, a division of Cabot Oil and Gas, where you'll drive the newest fleet on the road.
The steady schedule. The 4-2 schedule for a driver, a 4-2 schedule is great.
Gas Search Drilling Services. Get the phone number at gassearchdrilling.com.
It's always a good time for Greenlee's Barbecue.
For all your meat eating needs.
Whole pork, ribs, brisket, chicken thighs, grilled chicken planks, ribeye steaks, salmon burgers, and beef burgers, plus salads and side dishes delivered or for catering at your weddings, company parties, and other crazy soirees, you crazy kids. GreenleesBBQ.com. Greenlee's Barbecue, Route 6, Tunkhannock. Look for the school bus next to Keystone Truck Caps. Greenlee's Barbecue.
Lindy Corporation is a pipeline and infrastructure company, and Lindy is proud to work in the Marcellus region, towns and cities, and beyond. Apply at lindyco.com. And remember, if Lindy wasn't hiring yesterday, chances are we will be hiring tomorrow.
Are you a truck driver looking to earn $1,000 to $2,100 a week with full benefits? Well, Eastern Freight Systems in Tunkhannock are seeking local, regional, and OTR drivers. They even have an oil field division with lanes based in both Tunkhannock and Pittston, PA. They're looking for motivated drivers who are looking to earn good money to join their team. A clean MVR with professional driver training or experience are required. Come join the growing team at Eastern Freight Systems by calling 570-836-8050.
Welcome back to the Shell Gas News. It's my pleasure to welcome Tom Pyle, who I've coined the term the energy badass out of Washington, D.C., somebody I go to when we talk about national and international policy as it relates to the energy industry. Tom has done extensive work down there with the Institute of Energy Research and the American Energy Alliance, and just all around being a great advocate for the energy industry. Thank you for joining us, Tom.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you, guys.
Well, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. I wish it was under better times, because it just seems like the world is going to a hell in a handbag, if I'm using that phrase correctly. I wake up earlier this week and see across the news that these gas pockets are starting to come to surface as a result of an explosion on the Nord Stream pipeline system 1 and 2. And it started out with one, now there's two. And I was reading a story that there's four separate spots where this is happening, and nobody really knows what's going on, but everybody assumes it's sabotage. But what are your thoughts on that? What are your thoughts of it in the greater scheme of worldwide energy insecurity currently?
Yeah, well, let me give a shout out to my friends and family in Florida, first of all. I know some of our staff live down there and got hit pretty hard. So we're praying for you guys to get on the other side of this thing. This Nord Stream situation, first of all, who knows who did what, right? We're in wartime. There's all kinds of propaganda. I mean, it doesn't really matter who did it. The fact is that it just is a glaring example of the importance of energy, right? We fight wars, they're energy wars, right? World War II, the Germans drove through Africa. Why? So they could get more oil to fuel their jets and everything out of their, you know. This just shows you that energy is a critical strategic asset throughout the world, and the importance of securing our supplies at home, especially in Pennsylvania.
Well, we've been talking about it too, and just building on that, Europe is already reeling from it. Last year, when the war in Ukraine started, what happened? I mean, Vladimir Putin followed through on his threats to start curtailing and eventually shutting off natural gas supply, being the largest supplier of natural gas. It happened kind of towards the tail end of winter. There were some ups and downs there. People survived the winter, if you will, in Europe. other supply was located, prices started going up higher. We saw other fuel sources that originally had been banned and shut off, like coal and other types of power plants, turned back on. Nuclear's been extended enough sort of to be like a bandage, if you will, or a patch over a terrible situation. But here we are about to start another winter, and it's going to get cold over there. And now Nord Stream is not producing any gas whatsoever. And then you have this sabotage or whatever it ultimately is. And at the same time, I remember reading reports that Russia is just flaring off gas, right? Because it has nowhere to put it. But it almost seems like a big middle finger to the Western world there, if you think about it. Like, oh, we have the energy, we're just going to burn it off, right? Instead of storing it or shutting in wells or whatever it is. And I just think things are going to get worse, especially since we have not built any more LNG capacity in this country. We talk about it and we're redirecting some of the cargoes. But at the end of the day, LNG is at max capacity as well to support Europe and other countries around the world, let alone our own infrastructure constraints in the country. So I know we have a lot to talk about, but you know, again, what are your thoughts? I mean, for Europe's standpoint, I think they're going to have a tough time this winter.
Oh, they're going to have a hell of a time this winter. Natural gas prices right now are hovering around $350 or so, right? It's going to be colder than normal, according to the predictors in Europe in terms of weather. You have the entire country of Europe, coal industries are shutting down, deindustrializing because they don't have the energy to keep the plants running. When you know, they're not going to let their people die, right? It's a total and complete mess that is, you know what, almost completely politically induced, right? And also, you don't see anyone blowing up windmills in this situation, sabotage or not. It just shows you the significant strategic importance of natural gas as a resource. I feel for the people in Europe. But I hope that the people in Europe wake up and when we get on the other side of this, that they start throwing these bums out left and right. You know, Italy, I think, is an example of that, where you have a conservative now. They're calling her, fascist. But, you know, I think there's going to be a big wake up call where these EU, you know, these grand plans about net zero and decarbonization and all that other stuff. This is the result. It's chaos. If you really look at it, it's chaotic, and it's going to hurt. People are going to die as a result.
I think back to, a couple of different things, but President Trump, former President Trump, I forget if it was United Nations or a G7 summit where he called it. He said, listen, Russia is going to shut off your energy to Germany. Right. And the Germans were laughing at him. And now what do we have? You have a Germany, literally the pipeline that has been sabotaged was coming right to Germany, a Germany that said, we can go off of this and go wholly on green energy, now is burning coal, firing back up whatever natural gas power plants they can. And I forget if it was Germany or another country, they're instituting mandatory pricing on rural or basically homeowners and or commercial gas prices to prevent it from going up. Well, the problem with that is when you start to do that and you socialize the energy, it just leads more towards socialism and the underlying root causes of society collapsing, like we've seen all around the world in South America and Africa and the Middle East and these other areas when price controls are introduced, when you're not actually going after the underlying problems.
That's right. It's the death spiral of government intervention. When you start intervening in these industries and you start creating a nexus between corporations, you start federalizing a lot of this stuff, you know, nationalizing a lot of this stuff. And then when you have a problem or a situation that, again, you created, then you solve the problem by compounding the problem later or deferring the real pain, which will come down the road when the bill comes due, right? Countries have been destabilized. We've seen it in the past. You know, we haven't been that, we're not that far away from the situation we had where the entire country of Greece almost, completely failed, and had to be bailed out, right? So it's a real problem. I think that I wish and hope that the folks in Washington, the leaders in the White House, President Biden and others, would take a look at this and get off of this like crusade they have to demonize the oil and gas industry. I worry, for example, like in Pennsylvania, you've got a clear example of a candidate for Senate who has openly called for the end of, you know, fracking in Pennsylvania, right? This stuff's got to stop. We got to get off. We got to grow up, and we've got to get real about our energy, and we got to recognize the gift that we have underneath our lands and waters and get at it, right? We've got to build these pipelines. We've got to do more. We've got to break this sort of green stranglehold over one political party so that we can move forward and get stuff done here and help our friends across the way. So,
well, yeah, just build on that. And I'll throw out one more international thing, but I think it ties into what you had just mentioned with the upcoming political season. England, the United Kingdom, just reversed its position on banning fracking, right? Because they're starting to say, like, oh, you know, this isn't working. We need to have access to it. Meanwhile, we have politicians running for office and are in office currently that are calling for a ban on fracking in this country, in this state. And I think that's where you're getting at is we've seen it fall apart now. We've talked about it, and we've seen it fall apart in Europe, and yet people are running on those tickets and those agendas here, and they want to bring that to this country, to the United States, to places like Pennsylvania, and how disastrous that can be. We've already had billions of dollars of infrastructure in this state blocked by neighboring states and by political agendas, and that's already causing some pain, probably minor compared to what the Europeans are going through, but what if a John Fetterman gets into office, somebody that idolizes Sanders and that agenda of shutting down fossil fuels completely. People who are actively blocking permit review and other pipelines getting moved forward in D.C. that have been stalled for no, you know, valid reason or reasonable reason, and blocking members of their own party from even getting that stuff done. Do we really want to elect more people to continue our march towards the same pain and suffering that Europe has?
Hell no, we definitely do not. And, you know, whatever faults you might have or find with a candidate, you know, in Oz, he's for this stuff. He's totally pro-energy. And you want someone in Washington who is a champion and an advocate for these resources and not someone who literally has stated that he wants to shut them down. This is, you know, like you said, it's not as bad here, but natural gas prices are higher than they've been since before fracking started. Right. And they're not going to get any lower, anytime soon. So yeah, it's not as bad here, but it's getting bad, and it's going to be a definite pressure or pain point for a lot of folks when they start paying their utility bills this winter.
I already saw my electric bills go up. I'm sure you did too. DC, the radio station, everyone that we're involved with, people listening to the show has already seen it. But I think you made a good point. If we have a colder than expected winter, right? Whether or not it's climate change related, colder than expected winter, and we need more energy, we're going to start using it. Yes, we're blessed to make our own energy here, but because of failures around building new infrastructure, because of carbon cap and trade policies, new taxations, regulations, government burdens, right, that have been added onto us in the name of protecting the environment and doing the right thing, our costs will go up. And we will have to pay more for those exact same molecules. And I'm glad you brought up a good point. People like to think that the natural gas prices today in the United States are at an all-time high. They're not. People forgot what it was in the 70s and the 80s or 15 years ago. I remember I'm in high school coming out of it, and I look back. I didn't care what the price of natural gas was. I didn't care what the gasoline prices were. My parents were paying for that, right? And now, because of hydraulic fracturing and horizontal drilling and the shale revolution, we've had great years of gas prices that were affordable and in some cases ridiculously affordable. And now they're going back up, and they're going back up because of bad political decisions across the country and in Washington, D.C. We can stop it. We can correct it, or we can continue marching down this road of pain and suffering.
Yeah, exactly. And we have to. If we don't, we are going to see a lot more pain. And it's just going to be baked into the cake, right? Like we talk about inflation. Right now, we're all paying about $700 and $750 more a month just to live. Just to live. Just to do everything we did 2 years ago or a year and a half ago. Just our normal lives because of the inflationary pressures that have been compounded by stupid government spending, high energy prices because of these policies. And we don't have to. In 2019, we were energy independent. We imported, we exported more than we imported, and we produced more than we consumed. We want to trade that newly found and fought for independence with a dependence on China, right? Because if you look at the electrification agenda and the EV agenda and all that stuff, all of those components and minerals and materials that go into the batteries and the polysilicon for the solar panels and all that good stuff are either controlled directly to the tune of 80% by China. And last I checked, they're not really, you know, they don't really have our best interest in mind.
Nor the climate's interest in mind, right? They're building coal plants left and right to power their own economy while we force ourselves down that road. And don't forget, the infrastructure that we often talk about and need every single day, power lines, transformers, cables, infrastructure for communications, almost all of that is coming from China or Asia to some extent, but coming from far away. We don't make that stuff here anymore. And that's scary stuff, right? As we continue marching down these roads. And you mentioned supply chain issues, and you started off talking about the hurricane. We're already seeing supply chain issues for our food and agriculture because of the energy industry and decisions we've done against the energy industry. Fertilizer is made from natural gas. It's derived from natural gas, and we don't make enough in this country. We have to import it. Well, then some of the other minerals and things that you need, strategic minerals that you need to make agricultural products, guess what? They're mined in Florida, and this hurricane's going to disrupt that. So now we have an impact to our fertilizer. We have an impact to these strategic mineral assets like potash and things that we need. And oh, by the way, Florida is a huge agricultural producer. So what's the impact that it's going to be to take, I don't know, the second or third largest, I think it's behind California and Texas, third largest agriculture producing state out of production for even a period of time on top of high gas prices, the recession that we're entering, inflation. Wake up, people. The way to prosperity is by increasing the energy industry, diversifying our assets, and making more strategic investments here in the country.
Amen. Absolutely. And that means that we need to produce more. We need to build out the infrastructure, and we need to get the government out of the energy business. I think that is first and foremost one of our highest priorities. Because if you look at, you talked about New York, you look at the mess that New York is, you look at the mess that California is, you look at the situation in Texas, which people say, oh, well, Texas, why Texas? Well, because the incentives, the federal incentives for wind and solar production are there. Right. It's not a state thing in that case of the buildup of wind in Texas. But Texas, the state of Texas, subsidized the transmission to wheel the electricity from Sweetwater and other areas in Texas into the city centers to the tune of billions of dollars to the taxpayer there. That's a market distortion as well. So, you know, in the areas where government intervention is rampant in the energy business, energy space, the mess is evident. The prices are higher. There's threats of black, you know, rolling blackouts, and people are literally being told, on the one hand, in California, hey, we're going to ban internal combustion engine vehicles, and make you buy EVs. Oh, but by the way, don't charge your EV this week because we have, you know, we have a problem.
The grid might collapse. Electricity. Yeah. And if the grid collapses, it'll take a lot longer to turn it back on than like when a lightning strike hits it.
Exactly. So
along that line, you make a good point. I want to hit this point, and then we'll hit one more of your favorite topics as well. The reason why New York and California are in a position right now to subsidize and force those things is because they have the population and they have the industrial, or what I'll say, the financial backing of companies for the taxation. But that only works when you have them. Like New York's budget's well over $100 billion or something a year. I don't know what California's is. I'm sure it's up there as well. Bigger than most countries.
And that is part one of Bill's conversation with Tom Pyle. We'll feature the other part of that conversation next week on the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, and I'm DC Taylor. Stay here for more. You've probably heard a lot about natural gas and how it's helping to bolster America's long-term energy security. But did you know that the Marcellus Shale in Pennsylvania is home to an abundance of natural gas? This formation is the second largest natural gas field in the world, and the reason why Coterra Energy is investing billions of dollars in the production of this valuable resource. By doing so, we're helping America become a world leader in energy production. We're also helping to generate a stronger local economy by creating hundreds of thousands of jobs and paying millions in taxes and royalties to landowners, farmers, and dairy producers. Clean-burning American natural gas also helps our country reduce energy costs, improves air quality, and protects the environment. Here's to securing our nation's energy future and creating economic prosperity for today's farmers and the generations that follow. Coterra Energy, responsibly producing clean energy for all.
Are you looking for work in the gas industry? Lindy Corporation is always looking for good people. Apply at lindyco.com. Lindy installs water lines, sewer lines, and gas lines. We're busy in the Marcellus region. Apply for your next career at lindyco.com.
Why choose Lackawanna College? Lackawanna College can give you the start you need. Spend 2 years earning your degree and go right to work earning a great salary. With 29 degree programs in competitive industries like culinary and hospitality management, petroleum and natural gas, and sonography, Lackawanna College can help you find your future. Visit lackawanna.edu for more information on how to apply or contact the admissions office at 570-961-7814. Why choose Lackawanna College? If you're looking to get ahead in your career or start a new one, Lackawanna College's continuing education department offers a wide variety of certificate programs that are highly affordable and can help you get back to work quickly. Specialized training for workforce development and allied health careers is available, as well as the Lackawanna College Police Academy and the EMS Academy. Call 570-961-7813 for more information or visit lackawanna.edu. Find your future at Lackawanna College.
Environmental protection affects you no matter what industry you serve. Oso Wash provides the only certified clean solution you should trust for your vehicles. Oso is the only certified oil and gas industry clean tank washing facility in Northeast PA that's available 7 days a week. If it could get dirty, Oso can clean it. They're about 6 miles north of Tunkhannock off of Route 29 on Aldovan Road. 570-996-WASH and find them on Facebook. They are Oso Wash. This is the Shale Gas News with Bill DeRozier, Rusty Fender, and I'm DC Taylor. Coming up in just a few minutes, the job segment brought to us by Lackawanna College and their School of Petroleum and Natural Gas. But first, the top five each weekday Marcellus Drilling News. That is MarcellusDrilling.com. They locate and share news from the Marcellus and Utica Shale. Over 50,000 people read MDN each month. So we use it as a barometer to tell us which stories people find the most interesting. MDN editor Jim Willis compiles a list of the top stories each week. So here you go. A summary of the top five most read stories on MDN over the past 7 days. Coming in at number five last week, Repsol sells 25% of upstream oil and gas unit to EIG for $4.8 billion. Spanish-owned Repsol owns 214,000 net acres of leases in the Marcellus Shale, primarily located in northeastern Pennsylvania, in Bradford, Susquehanna,
and Tioga counties. However, the company's upstream drilling operations extend far beyond the Marcellus to other plays and even to other countries. EIG, a leading institutional investor in the global energy and infrastructure sectors, a few days ago, they announced that they've entered into a deal with Repsol to acquire a 25% stake in Repsol's upstream operations. EIG will pay Repsol $4.8 billion for the privilege. And what will Repsol do with $4.8 billion in cash? Repsol plans to blow the money it receives on sketchy investments in unreliable renewables like solar, wind, and hydrogen. What a complete waste. But there you have it. Global warming madness has infected even the oil and gas industry. Repsol will create a new subsidiary called Repsol Upstream, 25% of which will be owned by a newly formed subsidiary of EIG called Breakwater Energy. There is no word yet on how this new arrangement might affect Repsol's drilling in plays like the Marcellus. We expect it likely will not. We expect the existing program to chug along as it has. Rusty?
Thanks, Dee. Number four, Antero buying Crestwood's West Virginia Marcellus gathering pipeline system. Now, last week, both Antero Midstream, the pipeline subsidiary of Antero Resources, and Crestwood Equity Partners announced a deal to sell Crestwood's remaining Marcellus assets to Antero for $205 million. The assets include 72 miles of dry gas gathering pipelines and nine compressor stations with approximately 700 multi-million cubic feet a day of compression capacity located in Doddridge County and Harrison counties in West Virginia. Antero Resources is one of the largest drillers in the Marcellus Utica with major assets in West Virginia. The company is the fifth largest natural gas producer in the country and the second largest LNG exporter. Antero Midstream, stock ticker AM, is about 30% owned by Antero Resources, and the rest is owned by investors. However, for all intents and purposes, Antero Midstream is controlled by and serves Antero Resources. Kate?
Okay, number three, most popular story over the past week at MarcellusDrilling.com. BlackRock, the $10 trillion evil empire, strikes back. In early August, the attorneys general from 19 states, headed by Arizona AG Mark Brnovich and Texas AG Ken Paxton, sent a letter to the world's largest investment firm, BlackRock, to say the company's pressure on investors to divest from fossil energy companies based on so-called ESG, environmental social governance criteria, may in fact be illegal. The AGs are banding together to investigate BlackRock and its anti-fossil fuel policies. BlackRock, with $10 trillion in assets under management in its investment portfolio, has just fired back with a letter of its own defending its policies regarding climate risk to the group of AGs investigating it. Rusty?
Number two, DC, Manchin deal to complete the MVP begins to fall apart in the United States House. Now, we will continue to update MDN readers throughout the month and listeners as well of September as United States Senator Joe Manchin's huge gamble of trading away the future of the country to finish the Mountain Valley Pipeline plays out. We spotted a story that quotes powerful Democrat members of the United States House of Representatives saying they have no allegiance to a deal made in the Senate, even though Speaker Nancy Pelosi promised support. A radical organization called Earth Justice, that's an adjunct of the Democratic Party, held a rally in the D.C. swamp a few days ago to oppose Manchin's Save MVP bill. Some 72 House Democrats, a full third of the Democratic House members, signed a letter to Speaker Pelosi announcing their opposition to the plan. And Senator Bernie Sanders gave a fiery speech on the Senate floor denouncing the plan. You can expect a fierce battle against Manchin's plan. The big question is whether or not Manchin can convince enough Republicans to support his plan in both chambers of Congress to get the deal done. DC?
Okay, here you go. The number one most popular story on MarcellusDrilling.com over the past week. EQT CEO Toby Rice pulls back the curtain on Tug Hill $5.2 billion deal. A couple weeks ago, MDN brought you the news that EQT Corporation is buying the West Virginia assets of Tug Hill Operating, the company's THQ Appalachia operation, for $5.2 billion. The deal adds roughly 90,000 leased acres, mainly in Marshall and Wetzel counties, to EQT's massive existing footprint. It also adds an extra 800 million cubic feet per day of production to EQT's current 5.5 billion cubic feet per day. EQT CEO Toby Rice went on the record with the Pittsburgh Business Times to share his reasoning and thoughts behind the Tug Hill acquisition. Rice pulled back the curtain, giving a behind-the-scenes look at how deals like this come together. One of the big motivations for Rice is that he loves, loves, loves Marshall County, West Virginia. Marshall County, he says, Marshall County, I think, is one of the most exciting counties in Appalachia. He's also excited to pick up 90 miles of gathering pipeline and a processing plant as part of the deal. Rice said the deal ticks all of the boxes for EQT. The deal has to make sense, even if the price of natural gas sinks to $3 per multi-million BTU, where it historically has been until recently. The deal can't affect the company's recently hard-won investment grade status, and it has to upgrade the quality of EQT's existing assets. All of those things are true about the Tug Hill deal. So there you go. The top five stories thousands of people read this past week on MDN. If you'd like to keep track of the latest Marcellus and Utica news each day, it's easy. Just subscribe to Marcellus Drilling News at marcellusdrilling.com. Click on the subscribe link. Costs you $7.95 a month or $79.50 for the year. There you go. And it is now time for the job segment, exploring careers in the energy industries. It is brought to us by Lackawanna College and their School of Petroleum and Natural Gas. Lackawanna College, where you go to find your future. Rusty?
Thank you, DC. And in the Keystone State, we'll start. The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania still looking for oil and gas inspectors. Those are remote in Clarion County, the center of the state, traveling physicians. Booth and Associates looking for a natural gas construction inspector. That'll be headquartered in Reading. Keystone Surveying and Mapping and opening for an engineer for the Distribution Gas Pipeline Systems Unit. It's out of Wexford. GT Lenkers looking for a junior landman. That's the Renewables Division based in Philadelphia. RWE Renewables America looking for an HSE site coordinator. That's out of the central city of Philadelphia. Rev LNG looking for a virtual pipeline technician for their natural gas division. That's also headquartered in Reading. Tetra Tech looking for a drilling assistant and a civil structural engineer. The structural engineer based in Langhorne near Philadelphia. The drilling assistant based in Dubois. Emerson looking for an office administrator. It's out of Ivyland. Estes Compression looking for a natural gas compression field service technician. That's the entire state of Pennsylvania. It is a traveling position. The Exelon Corporation looking for an engineer for their gas engineering and design units out of Conshohocken. And TC Energy looking for a pipeline for the mechanical inspection unit. It's out of Gettysburg. Moving to Ohio, Tallgrass Energy and opening for a measurement technician. It's out of Philo. IBP Technologies, LLC, just posted an oil and gas construction engineer opening. It's out of Hartville. Apex Systems, looking for a lab technician for the natural gas division. It's out of Jewett. Kleinfelder, a program manager and energy team lead, both remote in Columbus, Ohio. Gulfport Energy, looking for a project manager for their water division. It's out of St. Clairsville. British Petroleum, BP, an opening for an operations supervisor headquartered in Toledo. And Accelerate Energy, looking for a manager for their environmental energy and regulatory unit, it's out of Antwerp. In West Virginia, Baker Hughes, an opening just posted for a field operator and six CDL drivers. They're based in their wireline services division. It's out of Buchanan, Baker Hughes. Blue Racer Midstream, opening for a measurement specialist out of Proctor. A Diversified Gas and Oil just posted one for a measurement analyst out of Charleston. Northeast Natural Energy, a well tender opening, it's out of Morgantown. Hickory Energy Services, well tenders and flowback operators, all based in Blacksville. Greylock Energy, looking for a staff accountant. That's out of, it's a hybrid position, but then will be based in Charleston, West Virginia. And Southwest Energy and Instrumentation Technician available now. That's posted for Morgantown. Got a few in New York State. National Fuel, looking for a land representative headquartered in Williamsville. New York State Electric and Gas, and opening for a supervisor for the substation operations based in Vestal near Elmira. WTS Energy, and opening for a site administrator, a traveling position for the entire state of New York. Kinder Morgan, an opening for a technician slash engineer based in Clifton Springs. And Liberty just posted a director for their gas operations headquartered in Messina. And those, as DC mentioned, are the jobs this week sponsored by Lackawanna College, the School of Petroleum and Natural Gas, Lackawanna College, where you go to find your future. The Shale Gas News. On our network of stations, for Bill DeRosa, DC Taylor, and Rusty Fender, we'll see you back here at the same time, same stations next week. The Shale Gas News.